Now, I'm pleased to say my guest has arrived. It's Ed Moore. Now, Ed's an award-winning environmentalist, former eco-coordinator and teacher at Damer's First School, and he's recently returned from working at Green School in Bali, one of the top eco-schools in the world. Good afternoon to you, Ed.
Hey, good afternoon.
And thanks for coming in. So, shall we start with Damer's? So, you worked at the local school, Damer's School. What were you doing there?
Yeah, so I was a teacher, taught many in Key Stage 1, but I also led the environmental work. I was the eco-coordinator.
Right, you are. And then how did you end up in Bali?
I got headhunted. So I did loads of amazing projects at Damer's First School, and then I was on the radar of Green School Bali. So over sort of 6 months, they wanted me to come over. And in the end, I'd run out of excuses of why I couldn't go over. And I said yes, eventually, to go and work there.
And tell us, so it's a green school. Can you describe what's the difference between that school and a school like we would expect?
Yeah, so the school's in the jungle. It's all made out of bamboo. It's all off-grid, so it's all powered by solar panels, or there's water tidal energy coming from the river that also powers the electricity. They have buses that are run off, use cooking oil. It's 100% regenerative, reusing lots of items.
Fantastic. And what was it like working there? Pretty warm and a bit sticky, maybe?
Yeah, very humid, very warm. It was fantastic. You had to really think on your feet, lots of working outside. Children loved it. The grounds were just phenomenal. All the food grown was used in the kitchens for lunches and before and after school. It was a great place to work.
So they grow a lot of their own food, and then I suppose any waste you're going to use for compost and all that being a green school.
Yeah, definitely. Everything was reused. It was a single-use plastic-free school, so no single-use plastic was allowed on campus at all.
Wow.
None of it was sold, and all the lunches were vegan or vegetarian.
Mm. So have you always been, you know, interested in the environment and what you do now? Has that been a lifelong sort of thing for you, is it?
Yeah, it's always been a passion of mine. It started when I was 7 years old. My granddad was really, he was a head teacher himself, and he was very passionate about the environment, and he'd spent a lot of time in his garden, and I would watch him gardening. But also he had a great skill of like carpenter, and he would reuse things, and he would make us kayaks and boats and things for his school as well as us. But he already had that reduce, recycle already embedded within what he was doing.
Way before we all started thinking about it as a population. He was ahead of his time, I'm thinking.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we're talking in the 60s, 70s, he was doing all these things. And when I was growing up in the 80s, he sort of carried it on. And he'd make his own bread. He would hardly go to the supermarket. He would find vegetables within his garden to use. And if he didn't have something on the recipe, then he would just find something else within his garden to use instead.
That sounds fantastic. So when you were out in Bali, you made your own electric bike, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So a guy called Dharma, we're still really good friends, and we're still in contact. He had a business called Bingale e-bike, and he was making these e-bikes. And I knew from the off when I came to Bali, I didn't want to have a scooter, I didn't want to have a car. The air pollution was really poor as it was. So I felt I needed to show the way and show everybody else that it is possible. And we made an electric bicycle, and it was charged off a solar panel.
So when you're going around, do you find people quite receptive in Bali to your ideas, your suggestions?
Some were. I think they've always known, and they always think in their culture that if they put it in the river, they put plastic, there's loads of plastic in the river, they think that someone else will come up and clear it, or it will just disappear. There's an awful lot of work that still needs to be done there to educate the villages and the adults particularly of how to look after barley, and obviously tourism as well is a big thing over there, where tourism has gone like wildfire, people putting up villas and rice fields going, and that sort of shows in the rice count now. They have to import more rice than what they grow.
Oh, yeah, and it used to be the other way around, yeah. I'm thinking. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So tourism isn't necessarily a good thing.
No.
Brings a bit of money into some people, but not a great thing for most people.
No, definitely not.
Tell us a little bit about the country. What's it like living there?
Oh, the Indonesian people are lovely. They're really helpful, really kind. They'll take you everywhere. But I would say don't judge a book by its cover. Don't go by the holiday programs that you see and you think, wow, look at those seas, and it's like paradise. Mm. There is a lot of poverty in Bali. There is a lot of people living in huts and even people living in huts next door to five-star hotels, which I felt really strange. Mm. And most of the time the managers would say to me, well, we built a five-star hotel here because it's cheap land. The view might not be great, but it's cheap land.
Mm. And the people, you know, the people are happy staying there. They're getting luxury and and I guess like they employ a few local people, but they're getting paid a pittance compared to elsewhere.
They're getting paid about between sort of £5 and £10 a day, which is not a lot.
Was it a bit frustrating for you seeing some of the conditions that people live in?
Yeah, definitely. I went to a landfill site just to see the devastation of how much waste they were throwing away, and I was really shocked to see families living amongst the waste, the rubbish, and having no clean water to drink, and literally just living off rice.
Mm. And poking through the rubbish.
Trying
to find something.
Poking through the rubbish, and even trying to look for plastic so they could sell for not a lot.
Yeah, plastics, I suppose, cans and stuff like that. Now tell us about this book that you've written, Ed.
Yeah, so while I was in Bali, well, I suppose if we backtrack a bit more, it was before I went to Bali. I was speaking at the Festival of Education, which is at Wellington College in Berkshire, and unknown to me in the audience, Bloomsbury were there, sat at the back, and they came forwards when I'd finished my presentation and everybody had gone, and they sort of said to me, hey, do you want to write a book? I reckon you could write a book on greener schools. And I said, well, I'm sure I've got 100 ideas in me, jokingly. Yeah. And they said, brilliant, excellent, we've got a series of 100 ideas. Do you think you could write 100 ideas for primary school teachers, greener school? And I was like, right. Yeah, so off I went, and I wrote the majority of the book in 10 weeks last year, between October to December. Literally it's 100 tried and tested ideas that I've used in my teaching over the last 13 years. And it has a foreword by Dr. Jane Goodall, who's a bit of a hero of mine.
Tell us about what does Jane Goodall do?
So Jane Goodall is famous for her conservation work, understanding chimpanzees and how they interact and how they relate to humans.
Mm-hmm. Right. And can you give us some examples of your 100 great ideas?
Yeah, I've got ideas on food waste management. I've got plastic clever schools. I've got some really good ones about biodiversity, about getting children out into nature. A really good one, like adopting a path or a piece of land within your town, because I feel that the book's not just for primary school teachers. It could be for families. It could be for youth groups, scouts, guides, brownies, families at home. I think it's a book for everybody. It might say primary teachers, but I think it could be used for everyone.
Have you had much feedback from teachers?
I've had a a few bits of feedback from teachers who said that they find the book really easy to look through. You can easily flick through it and find what you need, and there are sort of bonus ideas and essential tips to taking things further.
Yeah, because children are very, very receptive, aren't they? Yeah, young children will take up these ideas very well, won't they?
Oh, yeah. They're like sponges. They, they really enjoy doing things in the environment, connection with climate change, whether it's nature, biodiversity. They love getting their hands dirty, getting stuck in.
And I think it's approved by the Department of Education, isn't it, for the curriculum?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So the Department for Education brought out a climate change strategy, and they're supporting the book along with Let's Go Zero, Eco Schools Globally. Mm-hmm. It relates to the green flag. If your school's going for the green flag, then it relates to that too.
So in the time that you've been doing all this environmental work, do you think people are getting better at looking after the world?
Yeah, I think I think particularly schools. I think in the last sort of 12 to 18 months, we've seen a change. We think they're more receptive now. People want to get involved. Teachers want to do what they can within their classroom or after schools to support children in their education and their knowledge and learning of the environment and reducing their climate footprint. I think. People are doing better, but we can also do more.
Oh yeah, we can do a lot more, I'm sure about that. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've got a book launch coming up. Tell us about that, Ed.
Yeah, so I had a book launch last Thursday on Poundbury, where we invited the whole community. I was really impressed. I was very thankful for the amount of people that came to the book launch. Yeah, I was really taken aback, and it was a whole community. It was a whole community to plan it and to put it on. So I'm really grateful for everybody that came and everybody who bought a book as well. It was very good.
How do people find the book if they'd like to buy a copy? How do they do that?
Yeah, so you can get a copy at every good bookshop. A great bookshop in Dorchester, Teasel and Skylark, they were there. Independent bookshop, if you're looking for an independent. Or you can buy it online at Bloomsbury or Amazon if you want to.
All the usual places.
Yeah, all the usual places.
It's going to be an easy one to find, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Lovely. Well, good luck with the book and everything else, Ed, and thanks for coming in today.
No, thank you so much.